Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Monday, everybody. I hope you all had a lovely weekend. Today's May 18th, 2026. And our top story this morning is oil and the rumor. I want to emphasize the following is unconfirmed, but it is moving markets and therefore it's news. We had oil drop from $104 down to $99 as of the making of this video when Iranian state media reported that the United States had offered temporary suspensions of oil sanctions as a carrot, if you will, in the negotiations to end the war. Again, I got to emphasize, this is an unconfirmed report from Iranian state media. All right. And, you know, along those lines, we've had similar jawboning nonsense, unconfirmed, anonymously sourced crap from Axios on the U.S. side. Right. It's not real. It's not real until both sides confirm that they're talking about this. And right now you only have one side saying a thing. And if there's one thing I've learned since this conflict started, when you have one side, either side saying a thing and it's trying to move oil markets, it's nothing but jawboning until we actually get confirmation. But it is moving. You had a $5 sell-off in oil. Stocks reversed earlier losses and are now green. So the market is taking this at face value, even though I remain somewhat skeptical. Again, I want to see confirmation. But look, there is some evidence that might suggest that this is a thing. You've got the number of tankers off of Karg Island, as we speak, is at its high since the start of the U.S. blockade. So that could be tankers getting ready to export oil because we're finally talking about lifting sanctions. Or that could be tankers piling up at Karg Island because the Iranians are desperate to store their oil anywhere because they're running out of storage space due to the blockade. So it could be an either or thing there. All this is happening after President Trump earlier today or late yesterday said that the clock was ticking, whatever that means, after the UAE struck after somebody, probably Iran, struck a nuclear power plant in the UAE. Now, I want to emphasize there is no radiological risk associated with this drone strike. The drone took out a generator at site, which is a very serious thing for operating the nuclear plant, but it doesn't have any immediate safety risk associated with it. No radiation was released or anything like that. But drones falling on nuclear plants is not really a good sign of peace talks, even though right now the market is very optimistic about said peace talks. Now, as all this is going on, the world is continuing to adjust to higher inflation expectations, higher interest rates on bonds, sell-offs in the bond markets, and of course, governments just tap dancing, doing anything they can to give people some relief from energy prices. We've got Italy this morning is asking the EU to exercise the National Safeguard Clause, which is a clause typically reserved for defense spending, as in like we're under attack, but they want to exercise this clause in order to relieve the energy crisis. The EU has been reluctant to offer this, and Italy is now the most indebted country in the European Union, surpassing Greece. As that's going on, you got Takaichi over in Japan is talking about more stimmies again, even as Japanese bonds are trading at all-time highs, at least on the long end of the curve. And the Japanese currency continues to weaken despite recent efforts to shore up the yen versus the dollar. You've got the IMF is urging the UK to not go on a debt bender when Keir Starmer inevitably quits. Starmer has been on shaky ground, so to speak, for the last couple of weeks, ever since he got trounced in some local elections, largely due to his appointment of a guy on the Epstein list as ambassador to the United States. That wasn't so popular with the Brits. And, well, it looks like Starmer's going to be out of there soon, or at least he is under pressure to be out of there. And the bond market is worried about whoever comes in to replace him might spend too much money. And so the IMF is saying, hey, UK, take it easy over there. Let's not go on a debt bender. Let's not upset the gilt market any more than it already is. Also, big news this morning in the U.S. utility space, NextEra Energy, one of the biggest utilities, one of the biggest regulated utilities in the country, if not the biggest, is buying Dominion Energy, another one of the biggest publicly traded utilities in the country. Dominion, importantly, is the big utility in Data Center Alley in Northern Virginia. That's going to be a big merger. there's obviously going to be a lot of antitrust review and regulators and approvals that are going to be required to close that deal. But consolidation in the utility space here, because of all the spending on data centers and all the power needs of data centers, and oh, Kevin O'Leary wants to build a data center in Utah. It's going to use more power than New York City. What's the worst thing that could happen? And on the subject of data centers, I have to bring this up. I saw a video over the weekend of former Google CEO Eric Schmidt was talking at the commencement. He was like the marquee graduation speaker at Arizona University's graduation. And every time this guy uttered the phrase artificial intelligence, he was nearly booed off the stage. I mean, they were booing him the whole time he was talking. The only applause that happened during that speech came when he was done and when he walked off the stage. And I take it those were relief applause. But go figure, a whole, couple thousand people who just went high six figures into debt to get a college degree that's now worthless. And here comes a guy who says, we are going to use our stupid chatbots to make all of your entry-level work obsolete. And they don't want to hear it. Well, gaslighting college students, not a good idea. But it just goes to show you guys, nobody wants this stuff. Nobody wants data centers. Nobody wants large language models outside of Silicon Valley. And of course, the crooks that are trying to finance this big infrastructure build out, that's completely wasted money. And of course, that's driving the big NextEra Dominion merger today. Meanwhile, we've got China economic growth is slowing substantially. This is interesting in China. First of all, their fixed investment fell. Now, that's important because fixed investment is the category here in the U.S. that is driving all of the economic growth because we're building more data centers than the rest of the world combined. And Kevin O'Leary said we need to let him build his data center five times the size of Manhattan because if we don't, the Chinese will. Well, the Chinese aren't. They're not. Their fixed investment is falling. It's in the tape. This is Chinese government data, which, if anything, they massage it higher to make things look better. The Chinese are not building out data centers like crazy like we are. They are building some, and they're doing it with illegally sourced NVIDIA chips, which the Department of Justice continues to turn a blind eye to, even though we got token prosecutions of that Supermicro founder. They're still getting their hands on millions of these GPUs, but they're just not building out the data centers like we are here in the States because it's a waste of freaking money. You've also got, what do we have? Industrial production grew at 4.1% in China. That might sound like a good number by U.S. standards, but that's actually the slowest industrial production growth in 3 years in China. Oil taking a big chunk out of them there. And retail sales were anemic at just 0.2% as consumers are hurting in China as well. Bad data out of the Chinese this morning. And on the private credit space, hey, the DOJ is getting around to doing something. This is interesting. BlackRock's private credit valuations are being probed by the Department of Justice. Just want to make sure, remember, BlackRock derives their fees based on the net asset value of the funds that they manage, and 2% management fee. So if we artificially inflate the value of these loans, well, then we are artificially inflating the value of the fees we're charging for people who we just told them a few months ago, you're not allowed to take your money out of the fund because we're afraid to sell it and find out what it's really worth. That's fun, the DOJ finally doing something about private credit. And even as that is happening, we've got Mortgage Company of Canada has paused redemptions and monthly distributions in their real estate fund, citing weakness in the Toronto real estate market. There's some of these real estate funds in Canada have had their redemptions paused and their distributions paused for almost 4 years. It's that other sector where the avoidance of price discovery seems to be like the primary driver of everybody in the industry. Sooner or later, you can only avoid price discovery for so long. Sooner or later, you've got to sell and you've got to accurately market. And apparently Canadian real estate is doing the same thing that private credit is. Guys, we got a lot to talk about this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget the like button and the subscribe button for you new guys. You can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads because we do this one every single day. And right now, the S&P 500 is positive, 13 points in the green, all of which coming in the aftermath of that Tasnim report. I don't know if I'm saying that wrong. The IRGC media arm reported that the U.S. had offered sanctions relief in order to get them back to the table. I don't know if it's true or not, but the stock market trading up on the news, 11 points now in the green. The Dow is still in the negative, down only 10 points, but it was down several hundred earlier this morning, and it has risen about 300 points ever since that rumor in Iranian news. Basically flat on the day. And the NASDAQ is now up by 141 points or 0.5% in the green. Again, all coming in the immediate aftermath of that story breaking. The dollar is a little bit weaker this morning, down 22 basis points at 99.06. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields are moving lower. They were higher by a couple of basis points this morning. Now they're heading in the other direction. The 30-year yield is at 5.108. That's lower by 2 basis points. The 10-year is at 4.582, lower by almost 2 basis points after hitting a high of 4.63 last night. We'll look at the 10-year chart in just a minute. The 2-year, 4.050, down by 3.5 points. And the 1 month is unchanged at 3.660. Take a look at the chart of the 10-year yield. We had a bad day on Friday for bonds. When we did the stream on, or we did the show on Friday morning, bond yields were down 5 or 6 basis points. I'm sorry, they were up 5 or 6 basis points, meaning bond prices were down. And it ended up closing the day at just about 4.60, which is pretty much right where we're at. If we zoom in here, you can see we're even higher than that. We went to as high as 4.63. But interestingly enough, we have now broken out of this consolidation pattern. We have not yet confirmed the breakout. I want to zoom out a little bit here so you guys can see what I'm talking about. But we have been in this consolidation pattern since fall of 2023. We touched the upper bound here a couple of times. This is our first breakout above that since late 2024. If we break out, retest, and move higher, that would suggest another period of substantially higher interest rates. And for whatever reason, this chart doesn't want to update, so I can show it to you better. But yeah, higher rates on the menu here. Now, let's talk a little bit about why people are selling government bonds. We talked about this Friday as well during that sell-off. Bonds are buckling around the world, propelling borrowing costs to multi-year highs as concerns over war-driven inflation and government spending mount. The yield on 30-year U.S. bonds is around the highest since 2023, while the equivalent in Japan has surged to levels that haven't been seen in the bond's 27-year history. In the U.K., the yield is the most since 1998. As markets stabilized at those levels on Monday, investors were grappling with the implications for other assets and economies as the surge in government bond yields pushes up borrowing costs on business loans, credit cards, and mortgages. All right, so that sentence there is pretty important. As markets stabilized at these levels on Monday, the bond market does appear to be stabilizing for now. But now the market has to come to grips with these higher yields that are going to push up borrowing costs on business loans, credit cards, and mortgages. And the reason why bonds yields have been moving higher, why bonds have been selling off, is the U.S.-Iran war. Inflation was already proving sticky at the start of this year. It's received fresh impetus from the U.S. war with Iran, which has lasted almost 3 months. Brent crude trading was trading around $110 a barrel, chiefly because of the Strait of Hormuz, a critical choke point. That has driven inflation fears higher. Higher inflation fears drives interest rates higher. We've also got the AI spending splurge. The AI investment boom may ultimately boost productivity, maybe, which would help restrain inflation hypothetically. But in the meantime, demand for semiconductor chips is forcing up their price. In turn, that's making consumer electronics, cars, and other products that depend on them more expensive, a phenomenon dubbed chipflation. HP and Nintendo are among companies already complaining about higher chip costs. As Ed Yardeni of Yardeni Research notes, technology companies are pouring capital into data centers, creating price inelastic demand for commodities and overloading power grids. And I want to drive that comment here. Creating price inelastic demand because the AI companies don't care how much money they're spending. That's terrible. That is a recipe for disaster. They're buying more chips and they're building more data centers. They don't care what it does to power prices. They don't care what it does to memory prices or chip prices. And now the price of everything from cars to cell phones is getting more expensive because of it. Well, you and I, we can't endlessly tap the bond market using special purpose vehicles set up by freaking Blue Owl to borrow $300 billion to build a data center to run our stupid chatbots. No, we have to put it on the credit card, or we have to travel less, take fewer vacations, or eat out less. But the data centers have price inelastic demand. In other words, they don't care how much money they're wasting. And also heavy debt burden. Politicians from Tokyo to Washington and the UK are promising to spend more or tax less and are under pressure from increasingly populist electorates and, government debt loads. Yeah, that's not exactly a new story here in 2026, but it hasn't gone away either. So that's why the bonds have been selling off. Bitcoin had a rough weekend. We're currently at $77,451. You know, guys, on Friday morning, we were sitting here around 81,000 or almost 82,000 at one point. And I remember saying, guys, with what's going on in the bond market, Bitcoin should be down $2,000 or $3,000 from the level it was trading at. And about 2 hours later, it was. And then Bitcoin continued to sell off through the weekend. Higher bond yields, a sell-off in government bonds, tighter liquidity conditions are not good for Bitcoin. Currently trading at $77,447, although it's higher than it was yesterday by about 45 bucks. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got gold is up on this news, 45.66 for spot gold. That's higher by about $26 or 0.57%. Again, metals trading like risk assets. It makes me nervous. I don't like to see that. Spot silver, 77.39. Higher by $1.40. It was as low as 73.87, but it reversed and went green because of that story from Iranian state media, currently higher by 1.9%. Gold and silver trading in tandem with tech stocks and Bitcoin, not really where you want to be. Copper down 0.12%. Platinum lower by 0.5%. Palladium lower by 0.2%. And WTI crude currently 99.57. That's lower by about $1.40. or 1.3% after hitting an intraday high of 104.36 overnight. Here's the oil chart here, still above that 50-day moving average, down substantially from its highs. And this is the story that really drove it. Let's see. Iran media said, that's important. I'm going to read those first three words again because I know some people are going to make snarky comments here. Guys, it's moving markets and therefore it's news. Whether it's fake or not, it's moving markets. Iranian media said U.S. offered interim waiver on oil sanctions. All right, so I would put this in the same category as anonymously sourced Axios articles here. An Iranian media outlet reported that the U.S. proposed a temporary waiver of sanctions on the Islamic Republic's oil, a key demand by Tehran to agree to a peace deal and reopen the Strait of Hormuz. It's worth pointing out that we did this at the beginning of the war. When the missiles first started flying and oil prices went vertical, we let the Iranian oil out. We let it hit the market. So it's not unprecedented. It's not so crazy. The U.S. hasn't confirmed offering the waiver, which would be in place until a final agreement is achieved. Iran's semi-official Tasnim news agency reported, citing a source close to the negotiating team. Guys, it's 9:15 a.m. Eastern time as I'm reporting this. So again, maybe by the time this gets to you guys, the U.S. will have confirmed it or officially denied it. But as of the making of this video, this is where we stand. Brent crude prices reversed earlier gains after the report and bonds rose on hopes of a breakthrough in the all but stagnant negotiations. U.S. President Trump earlier expressed frustration with Iran and told them the clock is ticking hours after drones targeted a nuclear plant in the United Arab Emirates. More about that in just a moment. But possibly lending some credibility to that story is the tanker tally at Iran's Karg Island, its post-blockade peak. This could be emergency storage, or this could be boats getting ready to export on sanction relief. Some 23 tankers have been spotted around Iran's principal oil export hub, the largest cluster to have gathered at the island since the U.S. Navy began a blockade on the country's ports a month ago, interdicting and seizing ships. The carriers and anchorages around Karg, berthed at crude or liquefied petroleum gas loading jetties, were visible on satellite images taken on May 16th, reviewed by Bloomberg and confirmed by analysis from the United Against Nuclear Iran, a U.S. nonprofit policy advisory group focused on Tehran. The current collection of tankers compared to four on April 13th, just before U.S. warships began gathering in the Gulf of Oman to check and stop vessels. So we got more boats around Karg that are either loading or getting ready to load. Again, does that mean that we're about to pull the sanctions, or does that mean Iran just has nowhere to put the oil? I don't know, but that's going on this morning. Even after a drone strike sparks a fire near UAE nuclear plant, the Gulf state said it was still investigating the source of the attack, which highlighted the risks of a war with Iran. A drone strike set off a fire near the United Arab Emirates nuclear power station, authorities in the Persian Gulf state said, a sign of the growing risks as the Iran war drags on. UAE defense officials said their air defenses engaged three drones fired across the country's western border, downing two of them. A third drone got through and caused a fire at an electrical generator outside the inner perimeter of the Barak nuclear power plant, about 175 miles west of the capital, Abu Dhabi. We'll talk about the location of that fire in a minute here. The UAE said the drone came across its western border and that it was still investigating the source. People familiar with the matter said it suspects the attack was the work of Iran, which it has blamed for more than 2,800 drone and missile attacks this year. 2,800 drone and missile attacks. That number is shockingly high. But I want to talk about where the drone hit here. They're saying that it caused a fire at an electrical generator outside the inner perimeter. I'm not really sure what to make out of that. I can tell you at a U.S. nuclear plant, when you hear electrical generator, that's either your backup diesel generators or your main generator, which is inside the turbine building. If they hit the main generator, that would be a big deal. And at most U.S. reactors, or at least half of them, that would have caused some type of radiation release. So I don't think they hit the main generator. Now, if they're talking about electrical generators outside the inner perimeter, that's kind of misleading, because the only other generators then would be like your backup diesel generators. But those are not typically outside the inner perimeter. Inner perimeter is not really a phrase that we use in nuclear power, at least not here in the States. They'll call it the protected area. But the diesel generators are some of the most hardened, reinforced structures at a nuclear plant, because they are vital backup power in the event that the grid goes down. That's what provides your emergency core cooling. You usually have several redundant generators at a nuclear plant. So a fire at one doesn't create an emergency, but it will prevent that power plant from operating. At least here in the States, the NRC would say, no, you can't come back up until you completely repair that generator, which, depending on the drone strike and how bad the damage was, maybe you got to replace the whole thing. So this is probably enough to knock the plant offline, not enough to cause a radiological emergency. And again, I'm just basing that based on this sentence that's worded very weird. And also, sometimes when the press reports on nuclear, they just don't know what they're talking about. For all we know, they hit a substation and a switchgear and a transformer, and they're just like, oh, it hit an electrical generator, because they just don't know the difference between a switchgear and a generator. That's entirely possible, too. Either way, drone strikes at a nuclear plant, we're going to call that a very serious story. And, when we had this going into the morning, this happened yesterday. That's one of the reasons why oil prices were so much higher. And then all of a sudden, the U.S. is willing to provide sanctions relief. That's another reason I'm a little skeptical of this sanctions story. I would wait until the U.S. confirmed it. Meanwhile, Pakistan deploys jet squadron and thousands of troops to Saudi Arabia during the war. This one's got me scratching my head a little bit, too. Pakistan has deployed 8,000 troops, a squadron of fighter jets, and an air defense system to Saudi Arabia under a mutual defense pact, ramping up military cooperation with Riyadh, even as Islamabad serves as the main mediator in the Iran war. How do you serve as a mediator in a war while you're staging troops right on the front lines of the battlefield? The deployment, the full scale of which is reported here for the first time, was confirmed by three security officials and two government sources, all of whom described it as substantial, combat-capable force intended to support Saudi Arabia's military if the kingdom comes under further attack. So Pakistan sending 8,000 troops, a squadron of fighters, and an air defense battery to Saudi Arabia. That is significant. And how do you be neutral mediator in a negotiation while doing that at the same time? I don't know, but the Pakistanis figured it out, didn't they? Meanwhile, the Europeans and the Japanese continue to dance around energy prices here. Italy's Meloni asked the EU for budget flexibility over energy costs. Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni asked the European Commission to extend greater latitude with European Union budget rules to measure aimed at tackling rising energy costs. Italy's government is seeking to include investments and extraordinary measures to address the energy crisis in the so-called National Safeguard Clause. That's according to a letter Meloni sent to the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen and seen by Bloomberg. The provision, which is typically used for defense spending, allows EU member states to temporarily deviate from the bloc's budget rule under exceptional circumstances, i.e. military circumstances. Italy's move could create frictions with the Commission, which provided EU nations with a range of options to address the current energy crisis that did not include the safeguard clause. So the EU has already said you can do all this other stuff, but not this defense authorization thing. You can't do that. And Italy's saying, well, we want to do that. Italy's request to suspend rules would concern measures worth around 1.5% of GDP. Yikes. According to something I definitely can't pronounce. 1.5% of GDP. This is not a small amount of stimmies that they want to do. Meloni's government is seeking fresh resources to finance the extension of cuts to petrol levies, which could cost around €1 billion or $1.16 billion each month and expire currently on May 22nd. So the Italians want to spend more, and the Japanese want to spend more. Takeuchi calls for extra budget amid energy shock. Japanese Prime Minister Sanae Takeuchi said she has called on the finance ministry to compile an extra budget in response to rising commodity prices driven by ongoing Middle East conflict, backtracking after repeatedly insisting such a measure was not necessary. Keep in mind, we're not increasing our budget. We're just creating an extra budget. It's a different budget over there. So it's really totally different, right? I asked Finance Minister Katayama last week to consider ways of funding, including compiling a supplementary budget, Takeuchi said at the ruling coalition meeting on Monday. For weeks, Takeuchi and Finance Minister Satsuki Katayama have denied the need for additional funds or fresh bond issuance, but Monday's announcement has been seen as almost inevitable given rising oil prices and the depletion of funds to pay for relief measures. The planned supplementary budget was expected to fund emergency relief measures rather than provide economic stimulus, Bloomberg News reported earlier. Yeah, you see, it's not a stimmy because we're calling it something different. It's emergency relief measures, not stimulus. You see, it's a whole other thing. To finance part of its supplementary budget, the government was likely to issue fresh debt, Reuters reported on Monday. Well, of course they are. And we wonder why Japanese borrowing costs are at an all-time high of 2.746% for the Japanese 10-year. Now, note that's a red candle, but we are up sharply from Friday's close. So even though the increase in Japanese yields has somewhat reversed, it was as high as, what was the high today? 2.797, currently 2.746, still up from the close on Friday of 2.718. So Japanese borrowing costs are rising. U.S. borrowing costs are rising. It's happening in the U.K. as well. IMF tells U.K. to stick to fiscal plan as Starmer rivals circle. The International Monetary Fund urged the U.K. to stick to plans to reduce borrowing and warned of limited space for tax increases as investors brace for a challenge to Keir Starmer's premiership that could signal changes in economic policy. See, the IMF is worried that whatever liberal replaces the current liberal is going to be even more liberal than this liberal, which means more taxes or more debt spending or just more fiscal recklessness. And it's already bad enough in the UK. In its Article 4 annual health check of the economy on Monday, the fund warned of the need to control the welfare bill amid a volatile global backdrop and high public debt. It praised the Treasury's targeted response to the energy crisis and said measures to limit the impact on households should remain both means-tested and temporary. And there's nothing more permanent than a temporary government program. Greater Manchester Mayor Andy Burnham, who is seen as one of the frontrunners, used interviews over the weekend to try to reassure markets that he will maintain fiscal discipline after he had previously said that the UK was dangerously in hock to bond markets in comments last year he later said were misinterpreted. So last year, he's this guy who's likely to replace Starmer. He's in the press saying we shouldn't bow down to the bond market, which everybody bows down to the bond market. If you don't, you're an idiot because the bond market will destroy you if you don't give it what it wants. And he's all saying, oh, we're dangerously in hock, whatever that means. And well, now it looks like he has a chance of taking over and he's trying to be like, no, I didn't say that. Of course not. Well, why would you print that? Because I said it. UK government bonds dropped on Friday after Burnham took a major step toward being able to stand in any leadership race, with the benchmark 10-year gilt yield climbing to the highest since 2008. Oh, 2008 was such a great time. The IMF said that the current Labour government is striking a good balance between spending and efforts to stabilize public debt. However, it also urged policy stability and warned of pressures from defense spending and the pensions triple lock. Now, the pensions triple lock, that is this program in the UK where pension payouts increase to the greater of the average earnings growth, inflation, or 2.5%. And that's one of the big drivers of UK budget deficits, along, of course, with defense spending, which is just ballooning in Europe since they can no longer bank on the United States footing their defense bill for them. All right, but enough about the bond market and international debt problems. Let's talk about NextEra Energy to buy Dominion in a deal that unites two key players in the race to power AI data centers. You can expect to hear a lot of attempts to block this merger. This one's going to get hung up in antitrust for years, but they're pushing it. NextEra Energy will buy Dominion Energy in an all-stock deal that unites two leading players in the race to meet growing electricity demand from data centers that run artificial intelligence applications. Dominion is the utility responsible for powering the world's largest data center market in Northern Virginia, where power prices have like freaking doubled in the last few years. NextEra is the biggest renewable energy developer in the United States. The Florida-headquartered power company is also the largest utility in the S&P 500 at a market cap of more than $190 billion. The deal will create the largest regulated electrical utility in the world. The company said Monday, NextEra shareholders will own 74.5% of the combined company, while Dominion investors will own 25.5%. And right now, NextEra is down a little bit on this news. Let's refresh this and get an accurate mark here. Down 2.9%, trading at $90.66. Dominion shares, however, are ripping up 11% or $6.80 higher, trading at $68.55. Again, guys, this one is far from sealed. This deal is going to take a long time to close. There's going to be a lot of regulatory intervention and a lot of committees and boards that are going to have to be appeased. And I'm sure politicians will come out opposed and some will come out in favor of it. So this one, we'll be hearing more about this merger in the years ahead. Meanwhile, China's economy succumbs to a slowdown and reignites stimulus talk. Oh, that stimulus talk. Every time anybody says anything about bad economic data in China, the Keynesians and the American press immediately go to, oh, stimmies are coming. And in their defense, that typically is how it happens because the Keynesians are in charge of everything. China's growth slowed across the board in April with investment resuming declines, calling into question the government's reluctance to add stimulus to the economy as a global energy crisis hits factories and consumers across the world. Official data on Monday painted a picture of an economy where booming exports no longer offset deteriorating consumption at home, prompting analysts and banks, including Nomura Holdings and Societe Generale, to urge bolder measures in support of growth. Fixed asset investment unexpectedly shrank to 1.6% in the first 4 months of 2026 from a year earlier, while industrial production grew 4.1% last month. Oh, if we don't build the data centers, the Chinese will, and that's why their fixed investment shrank 1.6%. The Chinese are building some data centers, but they're not building data centers freaking everywhere that consume more power than their grid can already provide. Also, that industrial production number, that is the weakest in 3 years, 4.1%. Sounds great by U.S. standards. By Chinese standards, that is terrible. Retail sales missed forecasts and rose just 0.2% in April, the worst reading since they contracted in December of 2022 when China reopened from COVID. The breadth of the slowdown in April is putting the prospect of a more aggressive stimulus back on the agenda after China stood out in its resilience to the fallout from the Iran war. The government pulled back on fiscal spending in March, while the central bank has steered clear of even hinting at any further loosening in policy amid ample market liquidity and weak demand for credit. All right. So you got slowdown in China, debt problems in the UK and Japan and the US, war in the Middle East, and oh, private credit. That's still a thing. BlackRock's private credit fund valuations are probed by the DOJ. Why are they being probed? Probably because they're just completely made up and never anywhere near accurate. Federal prosecutors are scrutinizing valuation practices at BlackRock's private credit fund, according to people with knowledge of the matter. The Manhattan U.S. Attorney's Office in recent months has been seeking information about BlackRock TCP Capital Corp., a publicly traded business development company, said the people who asked not to be identified. Executives have been questioned as part of the probe, one of the people said. A representative for BlackRock declined to comment, of course. Jay Clayton, who runs the Southern District in New York, said in November he was concerned about how firms value private assets and that people should know that the financial regulators and the departments are looking at those. This week, while downplaying concerns about an imminent financial crisis from private credit, Clayton reiterated at a Managed Funds Association conference that if people are mismarking in order to generate fees, that's always been a no-no. In other words, artificially inflating the valuation of the debt in these funds increases the fees they're able to charge because they charge a fixed management fee. And so they're just stealing by lying about what things are worth. And yeah, that is a no-no. Thank you for that, Mr. Clayton. It's not immediately clear whether the probe of the BlackRock fund, which trades under the ticker TCPC, is part of the broader SDNY inquiry. Probes can end without charges being filed. TCPC filed a rare off-cycle disclosure in January that said it expected to slash the value of its assets by 19% That sent shares of the fund plunging 13% on January 26th, the most since March of 2020. A number of class action lawsuits have since been filed on behalf of investors that claim it made materially false statements and that it didn't properly value its loans. The portfolio markdown was among the starkest examples of how quickly valuations can change in the $1.8 trillion private credit market. And that's when we tap our inner Drew Carey and we say, welcome to private credit, where the LTVs don't mean anything and the valuations are completely made up. And in a story that kind of rhymes with this one, we've got Mortgage Company of Canada halts redemptions on liquidity stress. Oh, the Canadian real estate market is melting down too. Well, we got that. That's a good way to round out the show. Mortgage Company of Canada paused redemptions and monthly distributions in the latest sign of stress rippling through Canada's private real estate investment sector. Investors will not be able to redeem investments or buy new shares effective immediately, the Markham, Ontario-based mortgage investment company said in a May 14th letter to shareholders. Monthly income distributions will also be suspended following the June 15th payout. The firm cited continuing weakness in the Toronto area real estate market, saying home prices remain materially below their 2022 peak valuations, their 2022 peak, while transaction volumes rank among the weakest in recent memory. So look, our prices aren't materially below their 2022 peaks. They're slightly below them here, but our transaction volume absolutely is the weakest we've had in decades, pretty much the weakest since like 2008, 2009. Mortgage Company of Canada did not respond to a request for comment. The move adds to a growing wave of gating across Canadian private real estate and mortgage funds after the country's property downturn exposed the mismatch between illiquid assets and investors expecting easy access to cash. Hey, that's exactly what's going on in private credit. Isn't that special? Rompson Investment Corp, one of the earliest firms to impose redemptions in the current cycle, halted withdrawals in 2022 and has yet to fully reopen. Other firms, including Trez Capital, Hazelview Investments, Centurion Apartment REIT, and Kingset Capital, have also imposed redemption limits or temporarily suspended distributions as falling property values, weaker condo demand, and slower asset sales squeezed liquidity. So the same problems in private credit are rampant in Canadian real estate. U.S. real estate remains resilient, but only because the floor is price discovery, and they're doing everything they can to avoid finding out what those assets are really worth. And I just want to say thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button so you can come back tomorrow and do this all over again. Thank you very much to my magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee for supporting the channel. Links are down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.